Welcome back. The program is Arts Desire. I'm your host, Julie Motz. And from comedy to comedy, from Charlie Chaplin to Austin Titchener, Austin is one of the writers and one of the three performers in the complete history of comedy. It felt very complete and very comic indeed when I saw it. So welcome to Arts Desire, Austin.
Thanks, Julie. It's great to be with you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 424, Comedy's Seriously Funny. This week, instead of asking the questions, I get to answer them. I was interviewed on Arts Desire by Julie Motz on KWMR in Point Reyes, California last month, and although it may be the most serious interview I've ever done, it may also be the closest I'll ever come to being interviewed by Terry Gross on National Public Radio's Fresh Air. As a side note, I don't know what the UK equivalent of Fresh Air is. Anyone out there have any ideas? We talked about the complete history of Comedy Abridged, and it was fun. We not only got to talk about the show, but about the nature of comedy itself.
So how did you get the idea of compressing the whole history of comedy in a single evening's performance?
The Reduced Shakespeare Company is known for reducing large, important topics. You know, our very first show was The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged. And we followed that up with the Complete History of America Abridged, the Bible, The Complete Works of God Abridged, all the great books abridged, all the movies abridged, sports, the ultimate Christmas show. Since we covered Shakespeare, politics, and religion, we thought it was time to get onto something really important like comedy.
You mean you hadn't offended enough people yet?
Clearly we hadn't offended enough people yet. And our goal is to hopefully be equal opportunity offenders. Because what we do with all of our shows are celebrations of pop, you know. We love Shakespeare. We love America. We have different religious backgrounds and we always like to pick a topic that we love because we work on these shows. We write them and perform them for years. And so it's really, we don't want to be working on something on a subject that we don't care for. And when we came to start writing the comedy show, we realized, oh my gosh, we've been training to write this show our entire lives. Because as you heard me sing there in the song, you know, those were all my influences growing up. Looney Tunes cartoons and the Dick Van Dyke Show, Monty Python, George Carlin stand-up, the Marx Brothers, Abbott and Costello. All of this stuff was just formative in me, and it's really those kinds of comic tools were things we had used in all of our shows when we were reducing all of our shows, no matter what the topic. So to turn those tricks to comedy itself was both a real challenge and enormously fun.
I'm also thinking that as a comedian or any kind of original performer, you constantly worry of, you know, am I copying somebody else? And here, the whole point was to copy somebody else, so that worry was out the window completely.
Yes, well, I mean, they say that, you know, only the greatest artists steal from the best. That's why I think it's important for comedians any writers, to be savvy and current and up to date on what's being done out there in the field now, because you don't want to repeat or copy somebody else's work unless you're spinning it consciously, you know, for some sort of satiric or homage effect.
And when did you get the idea, this is not a spoiler, to couch it in terms of a lost book of wisdom on the art of comedy?
That was frustratingly late in the process. Since all of our shows were, I consider all of our shows to be basically the complete history of comedy, because we use...
If you look closely enough.
If you look closely, that is the subtext of all of our shows. But yet, we are talking about other things in those shows. So when we were talking about comedy itself, it was hard to find the thing to talk about. But once we discovered this idea of discovering an ancient Chinese text about the art of comedy, along the lines of The Art of War, which was written by Sun Tzu, The Art of Comedy is written by his younger brother, Achu.
Yes.
And We got one review that said, well, that's the sort of level of humor that you can expect all night. Well, no.
Hardly.
Yeah, that's just one pun. Yeah. But and we get through it quickly. But that gave us a clothesline on which to hang the story of the evening. And, you know, the story of the play is these three guys have found an ancient text, and they are out to save the world one joke at a time. And they don't know it's impossible, of course, to cover the complete history of comedy in an evening, but their naivete is sort of endearing. And that's why we put the disclaimer right there in the title. It's the complete history of comedy abridged.
There's an awful lot of physical humor in the performance, which I loved. Is that characteristic of your performances in general, or did it come out more because you were doing indeed the history?
Yeah, no, the physical comedy has been part of the Revue Shakespeare Company's, you know, bag of tricks since the early days of the Renaissance Fair in Nevada at Black Point. You know, when we were performing outside in those original days, you had to give big, large physical performances to carry over the sounds of, you know, wenches serving ale or people fighting with sticks over hay bales. And then when Reed Martin joined the company, my partner, the bald guy, he and I write the shows. Reed was a circus clown with Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus, and he toured with them for 2 years and a graduate of Clown College. And so he brought some very specific clown training, and we've all had professional theater training, so we all have that stage combat. And that was one of the fun discoveries, to really realize that the line between comedy and violence is so thin. It really seemed to apply to what we were doing.
Yeah. Not to get too deep or philosophical, but in the course of writing this, did you have any new thoughts yourself about what actually makes something funny?
Do we have any new thoughts? I'm not sure we had any new thoughts, but I do think it crystallized our thinking about comedy and about comedy's value. You know, we think comedy is very important because, of course, it's what we do. But it's also, comedy is a thing that brings people together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a way that theater brings people together. I say in the show that I'm the born again character in the show, in that for me the theater is my temple. And what's great about the theater is that you get people from all other tribes coming in to communally enjoy a performance and to laugh together. You know, theater doesn't exclude anybody. You don't have to be a member to go to the theater. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the thing that really crystallized for us about the value of theater generally and the value of comedy specifically.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of various scenes in movies which are not comedy movies, but where humor is used as crowd control. Somehow the crowd is angry and are going to attack somebody, and the very clever person, actually I think of Danny Kaye, so we were talking about comedy, will say something that will make them laugh instead, and their rage is dissipated, and they become connected to the person they were going to attack.
Well, I think and it's funny that you mentioned Danny Kaye, who kind of a hero of mine, and of course starred in the movie The Court Jester. And the court jester performed a valuable function in society. You know, he eased tension by saying things, making jokes that maybe other people couldn't say. He also told the truth to power. You know, so maybe Jon Stewart is one of our jesters today. I think there's a very, that's the other thing. There's a fine line between a scream and a laugh. Both are releases of tension. And I think you can diffuse a tense situation with a joke. I think you can also shine a light on something with a joke. I mean, it's interesting. I mentioned Bill Cosby in the song because he was a formative influence on me growing up, his comedy routines. You know, of course, now the stories about him are horrific and awful, and it's forcing all of us to rethink our connection to him and his work. And yet, the reason all this stuff is back in the news again is because a comedian, Hannibal Buress, started making jokes about Bill Cosby. Mm-hmm. He brought it out into the open using comedy. And I think there's something wonderfully ironic about that, since it's Bill Cosby, but also I think that just shows some of the value of it. You know, you can talk about harsh topics if they're somehow couched with laughter.
Perhaps one of the things that Nazi Germany lacked were enough humorists, but of course they got murdered or deported, so that was not...
Yes, yeah. I think, oh boy, who said this? I think it was Robin Williams, another great Marin County local. Robin Williams was interviewed on German television, and they asked him, why does the world think that the Germans are not funny? And Robin said, because you killed all the funny people. And that's horrible and funny, but it's true.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, since you brought up what the White House would look like if it did have a court jester in residence, and what kinds of different opinions and pronouncements we might be getting from the bully pulpit, so to speak.
Well, exactly. I mean, I do wish...
Perhaps a cabinet position should be created.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I volunteer to serve. At the president's command. I wish Joe Biden would fully embrace his role.
Well, his problem is he's too unconscious when he's funny. I mean, it's not right.
Yeah, he's doing it by accident.
Hello, I'm Adrian Scarborough, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week we kick off our 80-city UK and Ireland tour of the Complete History of Comedy Abridged with performances in Didcot, Norwich, and Milton Keynes before swanning off across the country. We'll also have a few dates in the US later this spring, plus more US dates this summer and fall, which will be added to our website as soon as we nail them down. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to reducedshakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Julie Motz on Art's Desire on KWMR Radio in California, where I'm about to talk about a scene from the comedy show which we won't be doing on the upcoming UK tour for reasons which I'll explain.
I have to say there are many wonderful, wonderful pieces in the Complete History of Comedy Abridged. But one of my favorite was the piece you did with puppets on the Supreme Court. I thought that was truly inspired.
Oh, thank you. That was one of those instances where, we make lists when we write the show. We make lists about what do we need to cover? What will people expect when they come to see a show about the history of comedy? And we needed to both perform examples of satire and parody, but we also wanted to get at the difference. What is the difference? Because it's a question people ask a lot. What is the difference between satire and parody? And that combined with an idea I had always wanted to do, which is that there are always three of us in the show, and I thought it would be funny for three of us to each have two puppets and play nine characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I thought of the Supreme Court ruling about parody using the Two Live Crew song as its precedent. And I thought, oh, hey, we can play the Supreme Court and sing parody songs of the Supremes to satirize the Supreme Court. So it was a confluence of ideas, and it's a fun number to do every night.
Yeah, do you have any thought of taking this abroad? And if so, how would it have to change?
We took it abroad. In fact, we performed it at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in August, and Edinburgh is a we performed probably a dozen times at the Fringe, and it's a great, great, wonderful event, that festival. Over 3,000 shows from all over the world performing in Edinburgh. But it's an international audience, so it's hard to find common references that everybody laughs at. And I think we were changing and updating references on a daily basis as we kind of went, wait, how many Americans in the audience today? How many Brits? How many Germans? How many French? How many Scandinavians? But I go back next month. I go back to England because I will direct the Reduced Shakespeare Company, the UK version of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I'll direct them in a production of this, the Complete History of Comedy Abridged, and they will tour it for 5 months across Great Britain. In fact, we probably won't do the Supreme Court scene.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, we probably won't because that's a little too inside baseball. We have a scene where Richard Nixon is a ventriloquist puppet, we will probably change him to Margaret Thatcher.
Will they know the difference? Yes.
Well, exactly. You know, polarizing, one polarizing figure for another polarizing figure.
For all of you, is your interest in politics as strong as your interest in comedy?
It is, yeah. You know, we try to be, you know, up to date, you know, conscious citizens about what's going on in the world. Somebody else said this on social media, and so it's not original to me, but I totally agree with that. Unfortunately, my desire to stay up to date, you know, conflicts with my desire to get a good night's sleep. There's so many crazy things happening in the world, and so many things to be outraged about. I have thought many times that I need to get involved on a maybe a more active, specific level. But I think the job that I'm doing is the job that I'm meant to do. You know, I think making people laugh is, it's a great job. It's a privilege to have this job. But I also think, you know, as you're talking about, you know, by making people laugh, we're also sort of making people think a little bit. And, you know, maybe that's where my talents are best utilized.
How do you feel about the state of comedy today in general, you know, as opposed to previous eras?
Well, it's very democratic. Everybody can post a wacky video up on YouTube, you know. I think it's a meritocracy, which is, I mean, I think that's always been true, but I think, you know, the best folks rise to the top. I think there's a lot of great voices out there. I think social media has given voice to a lot of people, writers particularly, who aren't performers, writers who can get their ideas and thoughts out there. I'm a big fan of Twitter. I have met so many interesting, thoughtful people, and also people that I'm a fan of. You know, I've met them via Twitter, which is kind of amazing. It's just this way of meeting folks. But I was talking to Weird Al Yankovic, for instance, to name drop there with a loud thud. And he was talking about this, that his job has gotten harder because everybody can post a funny song parody on YouTube, so which cuts into his work. But, you know, I think that kind of engagement, more people getting involved with comedy, makes it, I think, just more fun for everybody. My kid is about to apply to college, and I honestly don't care what school he gets into, but I do think he should go. I think everybody should go to college, mostly because the smarter you are, the more things there are to laugh at, you will get more jokes. Uh-huh. You know, I think that's the best, that's the biggest value of an education.
And when did you discover that you could be funny, or that you could take the human capacity for being funny and make a profession of it?
Well, I've been lucky. I've been making my living in the theater for almost 30 years now, since I graduated from grad school. And it's hard enough to make a living in the theater, but when I joined the Verdue Shakespeare Company in 92, that's when I finally began to realize, oh, wait a second, I write funny stuff, but I wouldn't consider myself a comedian. In fact, I still don't consider myself a comedian. I consider myself an actor playing a comedian.
Huh.
I'm an actor, and I play other roles too with other theater companies and, you know, occasionally television, but, it's great to be able to utilize, as I say, I don't consider myself a comedian, but I do consider myself funny. So it's nice to be able to put that to work, in a way that puts food on my table and my shoes on my kids.
But when you were were you the class clown as you were growing up? What was your sense of your own humor?
Yeah, I was sadly the class clown. I was the charming one that nobody ever dated because I wasn't the bad boy. I was just their friends. You know, sad. Hang on, let me find my violin somewhere. I'll play it as we go. It was my social lubricant. If I can use that phrase, it was my way of diffusing the tensions of high school. You know, it just kind of came to me naturally, and I'm grateful for it. I mean, I say that I got my sense of humor from my dad because my mom still has hers.
One of the funniest parts of the evenings, and we're talking about the complete history of comedy abridged, and Austin Titchener is one of the writers and one of the performers in this, is where you involve two audience members who, at least in the evening I saw, didn't exactly play along with tremendous enthusiasm. I was there Tuesday night. But you guys made it work. That was just extraordinary.
Well, we were, it's during a section on improv, and, you know, what we do is not improvised, generally. But one of the best compliments we get on a regular basis, people asking us how much of that was improvised, and very little of it is, but we want to make it look like it's completely off the cuff, and if it's happening, as if it's happening right now, which is of course the goal of every actor and every player.
So you're an actor playing a comedian playing an improv person.
Right, exactly right. Exactly right. Yes, not only am I not the best improviser, rather, I'm not the best improviser in my own family. My wife was an improviser at Second City in the 90s, and wrote and performed shows on the main stage there. So, you know, she just rolls her eyes at our version of improv. But you have to cover improv in a complete history of comedy, so we do an improv sketch. And it's one of my favorite moments in the show, because it almost can't go wrong. That's the thing about improvisation, is that if you yes and, if you use that the philosophy of yes and, where you say yes to your partner and you add something to what he has said, or you listen to what your partner says, or you listen to what the sounds that your two audience volunteers are giving you, you can turn it into something, almost always. Not that it's foolproof, but if you're good and you're listening and you're playing along, even the audience volunteers sort of get into it and feel like they've accomplished something, too. It's a really a great, great tool and a fun part of the show.
It was a very successful part of the show. I enjoyed it thoroughly. So you're going from here to Great Britain to do the British version. Do you have thoughts of beyond the complete history of comedy, where you can go next?
We do, in fact. We have started writing what will be the British Shakespeare Company's 10th show. I think people are going to be very excited about it, but we're not in a position to announce what it's going to be yet.
Okay, all right. Well, I look forward to being surprised and being amused and being highly entertained.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your serious comedy via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, comedian playing an actor Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Adam Hansen. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Adrian Scarborough, who I'm missing this trip in England because he's currently out in Los Angeles shooting the half-hour Jonathan Ames sitcom Blunt Talk, starring Patrick Stewart and produced by Seth MacFarlane, which will air in the U.S. on the Starz Network in the summer and fall of 2015. I've read the pilot script, and unless they totally muck it up, it is going to be amazing. And thanks very much to you, finally, for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 424, 1,270 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Austin Titchener, I want you to thank you so much, first of all, for making me laugh so much. And also, there was something poignant about the performance. I you know, when the song I Laughed If I Cried, I don't know why, I was moved by that. I didn't just laugh. And also for the incisive political commentary, and overall just a delightful evening.
Thank you, Julie, for your very nice words. It was a pleasure.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.